Welcome to City Girl Talks. My name is Yasmin Hardcastle, and I'm your host. I'm a Canadian 30-something cusp millennial female with a goal to empower women of all ages through girl talk about the real, the fun, and in-betweens of life. All the things 21st century women need and want to know about. Knowledge is power, and we don't know what we don't know. That's why girl talk is so important. Join me for conversations with inspiring friends and female thought leaders as they share their journey and experiences so far. Wherever you are in the world, grab your glass or cup of something lovely and settle in for some girl talk. Hello everyone, I hope you're doing well and staying healthy. It's been a minute, I know. We've moved houses, yes, again, we moved again. And you know, life. And it's just actually editing this podcast episode was a reminder that I probably need to hire somebody to help me every time I do have an episode. In the conversation I have with this episode's guest, we chat a little bit about outsourcing and the value of our time. So it's a timely episode for me because I really want to put out content on a more regular basis, but I do think I need help. So that's something to mull over. And I'm putting that out there. So if you do have experience with that, or would like experience with that and you're based in Canada or the UK, pop me a DM on Instagram at City Girl Talks. I would love to chat with you. At any rate, back to this episode's guest, which is the lovely, lovely, delightful Emily Dos Santos. You may know her formerly as Emily Kylo. She got married in the last year and she, like me, made an incredibly big international move. I went east to England and she went south to Brazil from Vancouver. And so we chat a lot via DM, but we had an in real life, so to speak, even though it was virtual chat back in either, I think it was early October of 2022. So yes, I've been sitting on this episode for a few months, but I think you'll really enjoy the chat because first of all, as I said, Emily is delightful. And if you've listened to past episodes with her, you know that. And we have such a good chat. And we talk about Emily's top tips for moving abroad. And make sure you write those down. I'll probably share a blog post about those as well. I share a couple of mine as well. We talk about what we miss about Vancouver, the quirks of living in a new country, and the benefits of being a Canadian abroad. And societal norms and the privileges that we don't always realize that we have. We also talk about dropping the timeline about things we desire and manifesting the life we want. Yes, it's a little woo-woo, but just go with it. And we talk about learning a new language and being bilingual. And I've also linked the BBC article that we chat about in the show notes. And we also share the ins and outs of applying for a visa in the UK or in Brazil. It's a little bit of a longer episode, but I think that you'll enjoy it, especially if you are thinking about, dreaming about, or even have an inkling about moving countries and following your dreams to do that. You know, Emily and I are both living essentially our best expat lives at the moment. But you know, there's challenges associated with that as well as the great joys that go along with it. And I think that this episode will be helpful and hopefully inspiring for anybody who wants to travel or move abroad and just, you know, have good experiences in life. So settle back with your cup of something lovely for some girl talk with Emily Dos Santos. Before we get into everything, how do you say hello in Portuguese?
If you were just going to be like, hey, you'd say oi.
Okay.
Yeah. And then they're very specific. Oh my God, specific about the time of day you can say a certain greeting. So it's like you would say bon dia if it's like the morning. Then it goes boa tarde, which is like good afternoon. And then there's boa noite. So you have to be careful. Like as soon as it gets dark, it's not boa tarde anymore, it's boa noite. In English, it's just like hello or hi. Like that's kind of it, you know?
So yeah,
it's funny.
All right. So can you please remind listeners who you are and what you do and, of course, where you're located right now?
Yes, absolutely. So for those who don't know me yet, I'm Emily, and I'm the founder of Cool Mom 101, and I am a brand and business consultant, and I really support entrepreneurs in crafting their story and designing their brand in a way that makes it really easy to magnetize the right clients to them. Because that's what we all want, right? And right now I am in Brazil. So I'm a mom of one and I'm pregnant with another one. And yeah, we recently moved to Brazil, which I know we'll get all into.
Yeah, so you just dovetailed really nicely into that. So you and I have both had really big moves, like across the world, essentially. Yeah, I went horizontal, you went vertical. And so you, like you say, you're in Brazil and you moved to Brazil. So what brought about the move and why Brazil?
I think it's a great question because everybody asks me. Everyone asks me here. Everyone asks me back home. We actually should talk about that too. Like okay. When you stop saying home, this is like a funny topic that's come up with another one of my friends who's currently an expat. It's like, what's the home? What do we say? Anyway, so the reason for Brazil, a couple things. So the first one really is that Mario, my husband, has kind of a dream of working in soccer, which is called football in most places in the world, people. So get with the program. So you would call it football in the UK too.
Yep.
So it's just, there's a lot more opportunity to learn here. There's tons of teams. The structure is just very different than, it's not as big in North America as you probably most listeners know. Soccer is the biggest sport in the world, but it's not as big in North America as everywhere else in the world, basically. So that was a big one. And then I think it just also worked with my desire to live abroad. I wanted to experience something different. And then also having a child who is half Brazilian, because my husband's Brazilian, I really wanted him to experience the culture, me to experience it. I think there's a deeper level of understanding that can come from that. And learning the language, it's really challenging to learn Portuguese in Vancouver. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm not trying to make excuses out here, but being immersed in a language is probably 20 times faster than just trying to cobble together conversations. And I took classes, I have had tutors, so I had like a very baseline level, but I was excited to kind of be immersed in it. So those are the main reasons.
Okay. And then, well, that means Leo, of course, is bilingual. I was going to ask a different question, but I want to talk about this for a second because I saw a really interesting article on the BBC, and I think I shared it on my LinkedIn, but it was about the fact that people who are bilingual or who just speak multiple languages in general, like how the brain works with that and how sometimes yes. that can be actually quite, quite difficult. Cause I think Leo is probably going to get to a point in his life where he realizes that he can understand two different languages at the same time. He doesn't quite grasp that now, I don't think, but I remember when I had the moment where I was like, oh my God, I can understand what my mom's saying, but I can also understand what my dad's saying. And that's really wild. But I've also had where I was in Quebec and I was with my ex at the time, but he doesn't speak French. So I was translating. So I'm listening to the conversation on one side and then translating to him on the other side. And it's just really wild how the brain works, but it's exhausting.
Yes. And I'm definitely at that point because I'm still learning a lot of Portuguese. My Portuguese is very basic. It's improving rapidly, but it's very tiring. By the end of the day, I'm always quite tired. But you know what's interesting about that, Yasmin, is for me, I think bilingualism, it's always been such a positive thing because I have learned certain things, kind of to your point, is that there's certain brain pathways, basically, that are activated and created when someone has learned another language. And so I always think that there's this certain level of understanding that you can have, and I'm sure it plays into learning other things too. And I always find that that's like really cool. And in terms of children, there's this interesting misconception that bilingualism makes you speak later and not as well. And that's actually just not true. There's like a very interesting misconception though. People think, oh, when they're learning two languages, this is specifically for like when their babies and their talk from the beginning, people are often worried. They think they talk less and talk later, but that's actually not what the research says. So it's an interesting misconception.
Well, it's actually funny that you say that, because I talked before I walked. And my mother and father would tell you that, you know, and I'm sure my partner would tell you that I, it certainly did not affect my ability to talk or anything like that. So, but yeah, no, I talked before I walked. So maybe it was having two languages. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? But it definitely didn't hinder your progress. I think a lot of parents are really worried about that. And I have a couple of friends who are speech language pathologists and all that kind of stuff. And they're like, no, that's not true. It's like, okay, good.
How is essentially picking up your life and moving countries while pregnant and with a toddler?
Well, I think it's funny because there's definitely added things moving. Say you're just moving within a city. There's added things that you need to do when you're moving a country on the one hand, but on the other hand, it's like, it's a move. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it didn't feel that different than other moves that we've had, I would say. And for me, I actually love getting rid of stuff and organizing. So there was something very liberating about getting rid of like anything and everything I really didn't care about. That felt really good. but yeah, it was like, there was definitely a lot of it. And then it helped that Mario actually went with Leo before me. So I didn't have to travel with the toddler. They kind of started to get certain things set up before I came. So that definitely helps. I was kind of on the other end in Vancouver, tying up some loose ends before I came, which, yeah, there was probably a couple weeks where it was a bit intense, but it was all manageable.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I definitely know that feeling of feeling. It was actually very liberating. I didn't realize how attached to things that I was until we decided that we were going to sell everything, like basically 95% of our worldly possessions. But then as I started doing it, it was very freeing and very liberating, but then also super humbling, because I remember, because Mark had left a couple months before me because I had to wait out my visa. And I just remember packing up the Port Moody house for the last time before I did the final clean, and everything I owned fit into the back of an SUV.
Isn't it wild?
And I was like, oh my goodness. And then that all got halved because I sold my office chair just before I left Canada. I sold my monitor. I sold like the laundry rack. Like I sold all the little leftover things. And I left Canada with two big suitcases, one medium, one small, and a backpack.
Yeah. So I was similar. I had two suitcases. I guess two suitcases that I checked and a carry-on, to be fair.
One of the backpack and my little suitcase were carry-on. And then we sent over two big totes of like certain kitchen things and stuff like that, like pots and pans. And because my mom had given me those, and Mark, I think, went with a backpack and two suitcases, and that was it. Like it was just mind blowing. I don't know that I want to do that again.
It was, you know what though? We didn't send anything. I literally got rid of everything. I'm lucky my parents have like kind of a bigger house. And so I stored a couple, like minimum, I would say like, what was it, maybe four or five boxes of things at their house. And then, yeah, we didn't send anything. Mario came with a couple suitcases. I came with a couple. That was it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I think when we were deciding what to do, I think for me, the biggest thing was, because I know how much Mark likes to cook, and pots and pans are expensive. I know that sounds a little bit silly, but it's just like, I have really nice pots and pans. And I was like, why would I get rid of them when they were given to me and have to buy them all over again? But I just remember thinking, we need to send the pots and pans.
No, and I feel like everyone has their like things. Like people might have thought it was weird that like a lot of the things that I brought, for example, I brought a few pictures, like framed art basically, because that's really important for me. I don't like to, like it helps me feel at home. So I would say, and actually put this as a tip, but that is a good tip when you're moving somewhere. It's like, what would make you feel at home? And for me, it was like a couple of my favorite art pieces, which kind of take up a lot of room, but I was like, I don't care. And then also I brought my favorite mug. Like, you know, just, it's funny, but those are the things that make me feel like I love my coffee in the morning. And I was like, okay, this, and it did make me feel good. I'm like, I already have a few pieces of decor in the house, like as soon as we got here, and I'm able to have my morning coffee, which is a big ritual for me. And I think that helped me really feel more grounded.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. You know, I did the same thing. I had, my dad gave me a mug, and when I used to go to his house for breakfast every weekend when I was like in my early 20s. And when I was a teenager, when I used to go to my dad's house, he got me a beautiful Denby purple mug, which is actually made here in the county I live in now in England. And it was when he died, I asked my stepmom, because she's like, do you want anything from the house? And I was like, is there a purple mug with stripes? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, I would like that, please. And I packed that thing up with so much bubble wrap, Emily. And I
same, like, yeah.
And it went in my suitcase, and it probably took up like far more room than it needed to. But I just remember thinking, like, this is my one thing that's going to make me feel really, really, really good. Yes. So yeah, aside from my yoga mat, but yeah.
Yeah. It's so important. And I think even with you, probably the pots and pans are on a similar vein, where it's like, that's such a ritual for you and Mark. And, you know, it wouldn't have felt quite the same. You would have found something similar, yada, yada, but that is important. So I think that's like a really key point. What is going to make you feel at home right away, you know? And so I think that makes sense. You guys brought your pots and pans.
Yeah. Well, you know what, let's just go into that question anyway. So you've given one tip so far. So what are like two or three other things that you would recommend to anybody moving countries, whether it's about like prep or just about living abroad in general?
Yeah. Okay. So the biggest one is actually kind of like a mindset thing, I would say, but it's like, drop your expectations, lower the, get rid of them basically. Because I think there's this ease with which we romanticize moving to a new country. You know, you think your whole life's going to change. And the thing is, it can, I'm not saying it can't, but I think having really set expectations of exactly how everything's going to be is what's gotten me into trouble sometimes, you know? Mm. So I think that's a big one. And it's a lesson I'm still learning. Even now, I've been here only 3 months, I guess, not even, but it's like, drop the expectations. You actually don't know what is going to happen or exactly how things are going to go. So just leave those at the door. another thing, this is just random, but something I just didn't think about is how many, it's kind of to do with phone numbers, but how many things are connected to like two-factor authentication through your phone.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
It's bad, you guys. So like, think about that before you go. So I'll give you a few examples. Facebook is usually connected. So one of my friends who just moved to Lisbon 6 months ago, she had like a hell of a time with that. The CRA, mm-hmm. for like Canadians. So there's like a lot of things. Oh, here's another one. My visa, which I ended up having an issue with. And now I'm like, now what do I do? Because I can't, like, it's not from my normal number. So that's been a whole thing. And you know what's interesting? They're really not set up to support you. Because you can't even, like, I can't even call the number internationally sometimes. Like, it's, anyway, that's a whole thing. But yeah, think about all those places as you're going to move where you have two-factor authentication and try and find a way around that before, because it can be a bit of a headache. It's like you did, thing I didn't think about really.
You know what? I thought about it sort of, and I was like, okay, I know I need to change these things. But then there were things that I hadn't even thought about, where like my Apple account, for example, like all those things popped up and you're like, what do you mean?
I know there's a lot of them. But yeah, I think as you're going about your day, basically think of all the things that you use a password for, and a bunch of them that you can think of will have the two-factor authentication linked to your old phone number. So yeah, definitely. And then the third one, I think, it depends on what your priorities are, but for me, it's really important that I live in the right like neighborhood. So I think researching that as best you can before, and being able to kind of like get right into the neighborhood. And especially, I think for anyone, but especially if you have a family, like it's probably better to just go straight to the right place versus having to move around a lot, if that makes sense. So, you know, we wanted to make sure that we kind of got settled versus looked around once we were here.
Right.
So I think that, yeah. So I think that's like a big thing for me as well.
Yeah, I think that was probably, it made it a bit easier too that Mario went before you did. And of course, like it's his country, right? So it's a little bit easier for him to navigate those bits of things. And I was so grateful that Mark was here before me, even though it meant I was dealing with everything else back in Canada. But I was so grateful because he was able to find us a rental and do all that stuff. And we've moved a couple of times since then, but just the knowing that, you know, I knew where I was going to be. I knew it was going to be like a nice place. You know, it was accessible, like all those things. It was just good to know that we had those in place.
Yes. And I think, you know, we actually had similar experiences in that way, funnily enough.
Yeah.
Same thing. Mario went before. He's the one who knows the neighborhoods and what's good. So he found this rental for us basically as I was coming. So we only had to stay at his parents for like maybe, what was it, a week or so? And then we were able to move in, which was great.
Was your visa experience pretty straightforward?
So my visa experience is, because of the timing, we didn't do it before. So basically I'm transitioning from a tourist visa into like a residency visa here.
Okay.
So it's like it's a kind of a different experience. And it's funny because in some ways it's probably going to be easier, in other ways it's going to be more annoying. So I feel like it's, visas are a pain in the ass across the board is what I've discovered. It doesn't seem to matter what country, it's like they're kind of a pain in the ass. So I have so many different options. That's the weird thing now, because I could get it through marriage, I could get it through my son Leo, because technically he's half Brazilian. So there's like so many different ways I could do it, and it's just deciding which is the best way.
Right.
And also they have a digital nomad visa, which I could also get. Like I'm eligible for so many. So right now we're just trying to figure out which is the best. And also I'm giving birth here. So the way that it works in Brazil, which is very different for every country, but if you have a child here, that child is like automatically a Brazilian citizen. Mm-hmm. That's not the case everywhere, by the way. My son will be given, you know, like Brazilian birth certificate, yada yada. And if I do it through that son, it seems like it's probably like the fastest, easiest route. So I think that's what we'll do.
Is it expensive?
It doesn't seem to be so far.
Oh, that's good, because getting a visa in the UK is astronomically expensive.
How much did it cost?
It costs I can't remember what it cost me in Canadian dollars, but it costs £1,800 for a spousal visa. And then you also have to pay the healthcare surcharge, which is an additional £1,800. And so that is for 2.5 years. And then at the 2 year and 3 month mark, I have to start applying to renew my visa. And so that will be for an additional 2.5 years. So they're going to take another, I think it's another £3,600 for me. And then after that, I can get residency. And I think I don't have to pay the health surcharge anymore. That makes it sound a little bit like I'm whinging about it, but like I'm very happy to pay for the health surcharge. I recognize, that this isn't technically my country, and I'm very grateful that I have access to healthcare. So if I have to pay for it, you know what? That's cool. And then after that, residency for a couple of years, and then I get my citizenship. But it's a fair amount of money. And if I had come here on a tourist visa, which I thought I could, to be honest, that we would just go, I would just go at the same time as Mark did, and that I could apply in the UK. I couldn't do that. I would have had to go back to Canada. Like if I was in your situation, I would have to go back to Canada and apply there and then wait there for 3 to 6 months. Like luckily, because of the pandemic, there had been like an expedited version that you could do, so I only had to wait less than 3 months. But now that doesn't exist anymore, but it's up to 6 months for that I would have had to go back to Canada. Now I don't have to do that because it would just be a renewal of things, but it's like I always joke that they want to know the color of your bones. Like they want to know everything from you, and they want all the money.
Yeah, yours sounded a lot more intense than mine. The things here, it's like pretty basic, but they want, and again, it varies depending on the type of visa. But the original one I was going to go for, which is like this kind of, I think it's called family reunion, but it's basically because I'm married to Mario. They need a criminal record check. But the problem is you have to have things certified and then translated. So that's like the tricky part here. But they want a pretty basic things. It's like criminal record check, birth certificate, marriage certificate, like those types of things, very straightforward. But yeah, you can do it from here. Like I said, there's certain things that probably would have been easier to just do it there. But on the flip side, there's certain things about it that make the process easier here too. So, just pick your battles and just go for it. But I think it's a little less thorough than the UK one, I
Okay.
would say. Yeah.
Yes, they are definitely thorough. I will say that about the UK visa and immigration office. They are thorough. They're very vague, but at the same time, like if you try to figure out like what you need to do and everything like that, because there are so many gray areas.
That's the problem, right?
Because it depends on your situation, and we're actually quite straightforward in our situation. We'd lived together for 3.5 years before we decided to move, so we had all the paperwork and stuff like that. But there's like little aspects of things. So like Facebook groups, top tip for anybody who wants to move to a different country, and if your partner is from that country, like there's Facebook groups that you can join for people, and people like share their war stories essentially. And so there's like all the top tips and stuff like that. I wouldn't have survived without that group, because when you go to look at it on the actual government website, it's very detailed but very vague, which is super frustrating. So
Yeah, and I was joking with my friend, the friend. So it doesn't say like, okay, for this exact specific issue or specific situation that you're in, this is exactly what you do, right? There's none of that. So it's like, it can be really challenging.
Absolutely. So this makes me think about a few things actually that I have found outside of the visa process a bit challenging. One of them being public transport in outside of London, because at least here in Derbyshire, it's not super great and it's not very straightforward. And so I would say that that's something that I miss about Vancouver, because Vancouver has amazing transit. What do you miss about Vancouver?
Good question. So, funnily enough, I mean, friends and family is really like the main thing I miss. Like, that's everything else I can live without. But the other things I do miss are It's funny, every time I try and go to get something here, like from buying underwear to like buying a frame, I don't know where to go. And it takes so much research because it's not only the stores are not the same, it's not in the same language that I know. So it's really tricky. Like every little thing I go to get, I'm like, I have no effing idea where to get this, you know? So that's hard. That's definitely hard. And yeah, friends and family is the biggest one. And then it's funny, but I miss the food in Vancouver is really good. So I miss like international cuisine, I would say. So like I miss Thai food and like Vietnamese food and Greek food, you know, like it's so easy to get and it's so good. And here the food's really good, but it's all in the same vein. It's like Brazilian food, which I love. It's good. So kind of like local cuisine. There's really good Italian food and there's sushi and there's like hamburgers. So it's just the variety is not quite the same.
Oh, okay, that's really in sushi. Wait a minute. There's
Yeah, there's a lot of sushi in Brazil. Actually, in São Paulo, it's got the highest population of Japanese outside of Japan. There's like a lot of Japanese people in São Paulo. So just in Brazil in general, it seems like most of the main cities have lots of like Japanese and sushi. So yeah.
that's really interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, fun fact.
That is a fun fact, actually. Okay, so, and then what do you love about where you live now?
So probably one of the biggest things is the weather. It's like sunny and 28 degrees and it's in the winter right now. I absolutely love that. I come alive with the sun. So it's been so nice. I'm probably not vitamin D deficient for the first time in my entire life. So that's great. And the people here, it's like there's a warmth about, and this is true for a lot of, I think, South American countries, but I find Brazilians in general, again, this is like a stereotype, but I find it to be quite true, is that the people are quite warm and welcoming. And there's like a joy. It's kind of hard to describe, but it's there. There's like, I had this like weird realization the other day, just to kind of illustrate this. I was just like thinking about when people smile at you here, and it's like it's not just like a timid smile, it's like a full, like joyful, full teeth showing smile. You know, there's like a warmth to people here, again, in general. And then I would say the last thing that's like so nice about here is I have a lot of help. So we have someone who cleans for us. We have someone who cooks for us. Yeah, it's so nice to just not have to think about those things. And for any parents listening, but any partners, honestly, the division of labor is challenging. You know, it's not easy. A division of labor at home, it's not easy to strike a balance with your partner, I don't think. Anyone I've talked to, there's often, you know, a struggle. I think some couples do it pretty well, but it's not easy, right? So it's kind of nice to just have that off the table. Like those are just done anyway, so we don't have to worry about that. So that is really nice. And then we have like a nanny who can help with Leo as well.
Well, that's good.
So
So
I
I think you sound a bit like sheepish when you're saying that, but I don't think there's any reason for you to sound sheepish with that because I remember I don't know whether it was something you did on one of your Cool Mom 101 podcasts or whatever it was, but I remember you saying something about like something that has helped you is like to outsource the things that create friction. And if you are able, if that's a feasible thing for you, then outsource it. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with being able to afford to have help. But then my follow-up question on that is that sorry, it's going to be a bit long winding, but like I know
That's okay.
people who had gone to the Philippines. Like one of my former managers from when I lived in corporate, she moved to the Philippines with her family, and they lived in like this, you know, this nice community, all that other stuff. And they had not intended to have a driver or a cook or anything like that because her husband stays home. Like he became house husband when she got promoted, and it just so he dealt with the kids and stuff like that. But then when they got to the Philippines, it was like, well, if you don't have a driver, essentially somebody's out of a job. You know, this is, you know, they're actually quite well paid, even though it seems like it's cheap. Like I don't know how to describe it well, but at any rate, like it was like, and also because of like a safety thing, just because if they were going out and about in a foreign country as Americans, there is a little bit of, I don't know if it's fear on the American part, but I think that the companies and stuff like that feel better if like their employees have a driver or whatever it is. And I'm probably like sort of not describing that very well, and probably putting my foot in my mouth in terms of what I'm trying to get at here. But if you did not have a nanny or a cook or somebody who cleans for you, like how does that affect like the economy of things?
Yes, I think it is like a kind of like touchy subject in a way. So I think you're right to kind of not stumble, but like not be exactly sure how
I
to
don't know
address
how to
it. And
talk about it. There's
yeah,
probably a more articulate way, but I am curious.
yes. And okay, so this is a thing I've talked to Mario about this, and maybe that's why I'm partly like you noted a bit of like slight sheepishness, because there's this part of me that is slightly torn, slightly, because it feels like, oh my gosh, like in the scheme of my world, we're not paying her very much. In the scheme of here, it is, right? It's kind of hard to navigate that for me, because for example, in Vancouver, if you're going to have a nanny, you're going to pay them $50,000 a year. That's just the nanny, you know? So you also have to kind of navigate those things and keep in mind, I think, you know, what the salaries are like here. But then I'm always battling. I'm like, so what if that's the salaries here? You want to make sure that, you know, they're okay. But when I talk about it with Mario, because again, he grew up here, he kind of, to your point, said like she literally wouldn't have a job. And some would argue, just to kind of go the gamut here, that that doesn't matter. And like they've been put in this position where the society hasn't allowed them to do anything else, and that's why they need to work this. So I'm always like sensitive, I would say, to these other sides of the equation. At the same time, she seems very happy. We pay her like well for the kind of like range for sure. And that's kind of where I'm at. It is an interesting conversation to have, and I think for me it is, there's like a slight uncomfortableness to it, because like I said, I didn't grow up with any of that. Whereas Mario did, you know. And it's interesting because his family was not rich by any means. That's the other thing, like he would have been what we call like middle class essentially in Canada, but that's the norm here, you know. So it's always an interesting conversation that I'm just kind of open about having, and open about it being slightly uncomfortable at times. Because on the one hand, like I said, I appreciate the help so much, and it's so nice. Like having someone, I'm working and someone's made my lunch for me, it's like so nice. And in the morning, she makes my coffee for me. I get so thankful. I know. Like it's really nice to be taken care of. So yeah, I appreciate the conversation. I think like a lot of things, I'm not fully done examining it, if that makes sense. But it is interesting, and it is kind of the way of things here for sure. And in, like you mentioned, the Philippines and just a lot of different
developing countries, I would say, it's kind of the norm.
Yeah, it also makes me think, like my best friend lives in Taiwan, and we went to school together in Vancouver, but then she moved back. And the first time I went to visit, and actually the second time I went to visit, they have a housekeeper. Her family is fairly well off. So I wasn't surprised by that, but I remember asking if I could go do my laundry. And they were like, oh, no. And nope. I can't remember the housekeeper's name. But they were like, oh, no, she'll take care of that. And I was like, I really don't mind doing my laundry. I felt so uncomfortable. And I know. But they're like, no, it's fine. And I was like, can you please just tell her not to wash it in anything in hot water? And they're like, Yasmin, she knows what she's doing. And I was like, okay, fair enough. But it just made me feel so uncomfortable that because it's not like my mom doing my laundry. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's somebody that I don't. And even now I would still say, no, I'll just do it myself. But like, it just felt so uncomfortable, but then it comes back to you and it's so humid in Taipei that everything just sort of like dries right away. And it came back to me all nice and folded, and it still makes me feel super uncomfortable. And that's just simply because I did not grow up with that sort of like luxury. I still had to fold my clothes, even if my mom did do my laundry for me. So
yeah, I mean, I started doing my own laundry and now I'm a mom. I'm like, I get it. But I started doing my own definitely in high school. I can't remember exactly how old I was, but probably around grade 9 or something. Probably my mom was like, F this. You guys are on your own. 4 kids, right?
I was going to say, your mom had a lot to deal with.
Yeah, totally. You know what, though? I will say, interestingly, it gets very not awkward very fast. It's crazy and incredible how fast you can
get adapt. Used to it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting the things that we don't realize, like the privilege, I guess would be the word, is of it. Like, whether we have it done for us or even if we have, like, you know, our own washing machine to do things and stuff like that. So,
yes, absolutely.
Thank you for sharing that. I was just really curious because that's not, like you're saying, in like a more, I guess the word is developed, like a more developed country, like here in the UK, if you have a nanny or a cook or somebody who comes in to clean for you, like they are in theory, like paid like much more than I would even think actually, than they would be for like a more affluent family in theory, like a rich family kind of thing.
Yes. And I think UK and Canada would be very similar in that, like I know lots of families who have not lots, I should say. But my sister and both my older sister and my older brother have a nanny. So it's not that it doesn't exist. It's just, you know, it's less so. And then for things like a cook, though, I would say that's a specific one where like you're probably very high on the spectrum of being like a top 5% earner. You know, like it's not that is not common. People I know who've had chefs are like extremely wealthy. So that's like different, I would say. I had a cleaner even, and that's something to your point about outsourcing is like whatever you can afford to outsource as a business owner, as a professional, as a parent, I think you should do it. And for example, and this is like a very, simple way of thinking about it, but if you can kind of decipher what you make per hour, and that's going to be different for everyone, but if you can kind of figure out what that is, so then at that point you're almost losing money by not hiring someone who can clean your house. So for example, my home cleaner in Canada was I think $35 an hour.
Okay.
Yeah, just to give an idea, that's like $35 Canadian. And they would come and do a really good clean once every 2 weeks. So it wasn't like and every day, every week kind of thing, but they definitely like helped keep up the house. Right.
Right.
And they actually folded laundry.
I remember seeing that in your stories and I thought that was lovely for you.
Yes, it honestly was. So even that, like you can make these things work for you. It might not look the same as what I have now, but
even that was a huge thing and a huge like weight off my shoulders that I didn't have to think about that as much. And I didn't have to like deep clean the bathroom. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So whatever it is, whether it's grocery delivery, you know what I'm saying? Like that takes your time to go do that. And your time is very valuable. So I'm all for all those things.
I love grocery delivery. I didn't think that I would because I don't get to choose my produce, but I got used to it very quickly. So
see, and you know what? You bring up a really good point too, where I'll give an example of that too. I was like resistant to get a Kindle for some reason. Mm. I kept thinking, I'm like, you know, a purist and I only want to read like the books in their natural form. Mm-hmm. And I finally got one and I was like, what have I been doing? Like, why did I not do this before? Because it's amazing. I read like 4 books the first week I had it.
You know what? It's good. My Kobo e-reader probably does not work anymore because I haven't used it in at least 2 and a bit years, maybe more. But when I first bought it, and I guess I was also commuting at the time, like to and from work and everything like that. But it was the most amazing thing ever. And I got so many books read because of that. And it doesn't weigh anything, right? Like you can put it in a small purse. Nowadays, I'm probably more in like the purist zone of things, but I am not necessarily having to go to a lot of places at the moment, but I completely understand. It's like when my bank, I had reactivated my checking account or something like that. And because I had a certain amount of accounts open with them, they were like, you get a free iPad. And I was like, oh, okay. And cause an iPad is just a quote unquote sort of like luxury that I was just like, I don't need that. Why would I buy it? But then I got the iPad and I don't know how I lived without the iPad.
There you go.
Yes. All these weird little things that we learn about ourselves. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. So what has surprised you about living in Brazil? Is it maybe like what we were just talking about in terms of like having staff and whatnot and how that's a little bit more quote unquote normal across the board, or is it something else?
You know what about Brazil in general? I wouldn't say I'm super surprised because I've spent time here before. Even though it is different living here, but I would say it's more of like a generally speaking, moving to a new country. And it's kind of a bit about what I said before, where it's like, I underestimated how hard it would be to like find certain things. And I think it depends on the country you go to. Whereas like, for example, you would have a lot of like the same stores even that we do in Canada or like similar things. Whereas here we don't, you know? Mm. So I kind of like underestimated how challenging that would be. And I think I also underestimated how challenging it would be to not speak the language. Cause people do speak English here, but not everyone at all. And I would never assume that when you go to a new country, that's not it to assume that everyone speaks English. Mm-hmm. But I think I underestimated too how challenging that would be to not be able to, like, I'm a communicator and like a storyteller and a connector. So that is challenging. So yeah, it's not really about Brazil in general. I would say little things, little conveniences, I was kind of surprised they don't have, you know, like it's going to sound ridiculous, but Amazon Prime, you know, they do have Prime, but it's not the same. Like in Vancouver, I could pretty much, if I'm sitting at my desk and I'm like, you know what, I'm working on this new offer and I really need some, like, this is hilarious because this actually happened. I was like, I really need my post-its to kind of like lay it all out. Just one of my processes, you know? And I was like, oh shoot, I need to get post-its. And just to illustrate the challenge, it's like, okay, let me just go to Chapters. Oh wait, we don't have that. Or like, Staples. Let me just go to Staples. They don't have that here, right? And then I'm like, okay, well, let me just order on Amazon Prime. It's not going to come within a week. You know what I mean? So it's just like, it's just, you get used to the immediacy of things in North America, I think, in general, and being in a bigger city. Cause I'm sure if you go to like rural, I don't know, Kansas, you're not going to get Amazon Prime either. So, but yeah, I think that was like interesting for me for sure.
Yeah. I think because the UK is a little bit more similar to North America, I haven't had as many of those things, but there are like different shops and there's different names for things and all of that. And I think the thing that has surprised me the most about where I am now is not even about like those things that are a little bit different, because I've spent a lot of time here. So I mostly know where I need to go and where to find things. But the thing that's really surprised me is how people here seem to think that Canada and the US are the same.
Oh yeah.
Because to them, it's America. And that, like, Emily, no joke. I opened the door to get speaking of Amazon, an Amazon delivery, and it was because you can order alcohol via Amazon here.
That's great.
Yeah. And so I can't remember what we had ordered, but but they ask, you have to like sign for it, and they ask you your year of birth and all that stuff to make sure that they're not selling to underage minors. But she goes to me, oh, are you from America then? And she was maybe like 18, 19. And I was like, oh no, I'm from Canada. And she's like, oh, aren't they the same? And in my head,
oh, no.
What did they teach you in school?
No, they're not. Oh my gosh, I'm worried for the youth. I think every generation says this, but I was laughing to my friend the other day because I'm like, I think the education system, this was about the States actually, but I was like, it's really lacking, because there was a comment on this TikTok where it's like this trend where a letter comes up and then you go through a list of things and come up with a country, a city that starts with that letter. Mm. And so this woman was doing it and she said Georgia for the country. And the amount of comments that are like, that's a state. I was like, oh, this is sad. Like, you even have Google, you know, you could just Google it too, right? Mm. Like, it was like shocking. But yes, I will say everyone assumes I'm American. It's funny because I want to say from the States, because when people say American, I'm like, what about South America? That's also America. Anyway, it's like, people are funny. So, and just ill-informed, people always think I'm American.
Like, they think that here too. They either,
yeah, and I'm like, no.
Yeah. I'm very firm about the fact that I'm Canadian, but sometimes people are a little bit more tactful and they say, oh, where are you from, versus, oh, are you American? Or are you from the States? And the ones who say, oh, where are you from? I think, oh, you've probably asked somebody this before and had a touchy answer. But then the people who are like, oh, are you American? And I say, oh no, I'm Canadian. I noticed this the first time I came to the UK. And I've noticed it elsewhere in the world as well. And I think it's a little bit maybe ill-informed, maybe ignorant, I don't know. But when I say I'm Canadian, there is a slight elevation of warmth towards me.
And oh, I think there is 100%.
I think that's a little bit silly. It makes me laugh, but I also think it's silly because I could be like a very ignorant, terrible person. The stereotype that is out there of Americans, like, that could easily be somebody who's Canadian too, right? Like, there's the stereotype of Canadians that we're all super friendly and like all this stuff. And I think that Canadians are super friendly, but so I just think it's interesting that they, because I'm a Commonwealth person, there's that like slight degree of additional warmth when they find that out. And I just find that interesting and also silly and funny, but it just, I've noticed it. And I just think it's just really interesting.
Yes. So interestingly, as I've traveled a lot, like you have too, especially when I'm in Europe, I find people are a lot nicer when they find out you're Canadian. I'm not joking. This is just true for me. It's been very true every time. Here I find, I don't think they really care as much, but they're just, they just do assume that I'm from the United States.
Yeah.
But they don't, I think they are extra like almost intrigued because it's uncommon. So that is interesting because there's probably a lot, I mean, there's way less population. So on average, there's going to be less Canadians here than there are people from the United States. Right.
Right.
So it's almost like it's very novel to people here almost. And I would say though, people tend to have a really good view of Canada and Canadians pretty much everywhere I've gone so far in my travels. And so I think we're lucky to just reap the benefits of that certain stereotype.
You know, it's, you're not wrong. Like, I think that we are very lucky that we do get to reap those benefits. It just, I just remember the first time that happened, I was like, interesting. Okay.
It is. It is interesting. And I would say in my experience, it definitely depends on partly where you are in the United States, because that like Southern warmth is a thing. In my opinion,
oh, it is.
People from like the,
I know. Yeah. I used to support people. Mm-hmm. When I was in EA. I used to support people who are from the South, and they are the loveliest people. And this is why I think, yes, like, you know, it's a shame that there is such a stereotype. Mind you, I have experienced the stereotype. I've been on a bus full of them in Europe, actually. So that was entertaining. But I also know, like, I have family that's American, and like, I used to work with really lovely American people. So I think it's, and the Southern hospitality thing is a thing. Like, it is.
It is. Yep. It's a thing. I think to it, like, from all this is what you can gather is stereotypes are just that. Like, they're a stereotype. There's always some truth to it. So, and I'm, like I said, I'm definitely a novelty here. So everyone asks me. So I have a pretty big sample size going, you know?
Yeah. And you know, if I was in London, it would be a less novel thing, but I am definitely, like, I am definitely a novelty in the village, and I was a novelty in the village that we lived in before. And I love watching it all sort of unfold, because I think if I were to go back to school, I would probably study like anthropology or sociology or something to do with like the behavior of people, whether it's in the past or currently, because I just find it fascinating how people react to things.
Agree. My degree was in sociology, and I still, like, I read papers sometimes because I do find it really interesting. It is fascinating why people behave the way they do, and those societal and anthropological kind of backgrounds to things.
Yeah.
Super interesting.
Yeah. I feel like we need to have a whole other conversation about this. I've forgotten you've done your degree in sociology.
Yeah, I did.
All right. So we've talked about the things that you'd recommend for anyone moving countries, and we've covered, like, you know, the nuances of essentially being in a new country and everything like that. But looking back on, or actually looking at your life now at the moment, because I know that moving to Brazil was something that you'd actually really wanted to do, but you just didn't like know when that would happen for yourself. If you could write a letter to younger Emily about what's going on now, like, what would you say to her?
I actually thought that my time had passed for living abroad. So this is like, I think this happens with a lot of people, but it's definitely something that has come up in my life a lot. This like timeline, urgency, I want to say, where I have this weird idea that things have passed or I can't do them anymore because I'm not X age, which is so weird that we have that. And I think we have that so much, like women, for example, with like, oh, I can't, like, I need to have a kid now, or marriage, for example, to another example, like, who says you can't get married at 70? Like, you know, you could, what's the problem? You know what I mean? Or moving to a new country. I had this idea in my head that like, I had to do that before I had quote unquote settled down. So like I have my own family now, my own partner and all that stuff. Right. And I had this idea and perception that you had to do that when you were like 20 in your 20s and like fancy free. And it was so funny when this all started to come into place, how I was like, oh, look at me just like proving that that's ridiculous. And your timelines are ridiculous. And you just need to like let those go. And not to get like super woo woo, but you know, one of the main premises of manifestation is that you have to kind of let things go. Once you have the vision and you're holding that, you actually don't know when or how that's going to come about. Right. And so I think I had always been manifesting this in the background because I always wanted to live abroad. I'm talking like, I actually went to the UK. I can't remember if I told you this. I thought I was going to live there, but like, I did not enjoy it. So I did not stay. I ended up just like traveling around Europe for 3 months.
Oh, I didn't know that. Huh.
Yeah. So maybe it was partly because of that too, where I was like, oh yeah, I tried that, didn't work or something, you know? So I think there was so many lessons in that though. In, like I said, in dropping the timeline, there's no fucking timeline. Like, don't worry about it. Basically. I think I've been so like hell bent on timelines for a lot of my life that I'm learning to let go of them a lot more. And this was the prime example. Like I said, I thought my time had passed. I was like, oh, I guess I won't be doing that then. And then look, here I am. I'm just turned 35 for whatever it's worth. I have a child who's 3. I'm pregnant. And it's like, why not? You know, like who said you can't?
Well, that's just exactly it. And the person who said you can't was you.
I know. And I think you do get inundated, to be fair, with this like timeline pressures and this idea that in society, and you'll know this, actually, I just did a TikTok recently about things I don't miss about Vancouver. So flip your question around. Because people always ask like, what do you miss? What do you miss? And I'm like, you know, there's things I miss, but also here's some things I don't miss. And one of them is, I think there's this like idea in Vancouver, and not just in Vancouver, but you know, maybe it's all of Canada, that like you need to own a home. And like, this is what you do.
Who can afford to own a home in Canada right now?
Yasmin, I know. But did you not feel a bit of that pressure? Like, it's almost like a societal, I don't know. Everyone was seemingly so obsessed with it. It was like,
even if it meant they were going to be house poor. Yeah.
They were going to be broke. And you know what, Yasmin, I hate to say it, but I know probably what's going to happen is there's going to be a lot of people who went in over their heads and are going to be out of a house too, because they are mortgaged to the hilt, and it's already changed. It's going to change again, the mortgage rates. And then what if you're already taking on more than you can handle? Anyway, so I found that there was this like extreme pressure that to do these certain things. And I didn't really like that about the kind of societal norms, I would say. So it's been nice to kind of like let go of that and examine. I think we should all do this, but examine for yourself, like, what are those things you really, 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 really like heart desires it to do? And what do you really, really want to get out of life? You know, and it might be that you finally want to start your business and you don't want to work for other people. It might be that you want to move to a completely new country and be in a different experience and experience what that's like. You know, there's so many things you can do. And I think you can really get boxed in by these timelines and these societal expectations.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's, like, to your point about like the manifestation and stuff like that, I think a really big thing about that too is to be okay with the fact that it may or may not happen. And that's when you know, like, to get super woo-woo, the universe has your back.
Yes, no, you're exactly right, because you've let go of the like, oh my God, I must do this. I must do this. And part of that is part of that conversation usually is I must do this by this time. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's not very trusting. That's not trusting at all. And so for me, it's funny when I kind of, I don't know, I just stopped kind of thinking about it. Then it kind of started to come into play again.
Well, yeah, because you just, as you said, you just let go. And that thing about like, if when you know you're okay, whether it happens or not, then you know you trust the universe and the universe has your back. That's a Gabby Bernstein-ism.
Yes.
And I remember seeing that on her Instagram a few weeks ago, and I was like, that is so true. Because like for me living in the UK, I tried really hard to move to Scotland. Through yes. work, and because Scotland is one of my happy places, and it didn't happen, and that's fine. But I decided, okay, well, that's fine. I'm still just going to visit. And then, you know, I met Mark, and Mark is English, as you know. And, and then I remember asking him just like when we were getting to know each other, oh, like, do you ever want to go back? And it's not because I was like, oh, I'm going to latch on to this person because he wants to move back home. But I was just curious because he moved countries, right? Like, and mm-hmm. like I've just done, he had done that like a few years before. And he's like, you know what? I don't know, but probably not. He goes, I probably would want to retire in Canada. I was like, oh, that's nice. And we've, you know, come back to the UK and visited and done all that stuff. And I was like, oh, this is so exciting. Like I'm with somebody who still wants to go back to his country, and we can travel and do that. But, you know, we'll live in Canada. And then, but I always thought deep down that he would change his mind, not because it's what I wanted to do, but I thought that he would change his mind and want to go back like in like 10 years or whatever. So when he was starting to like talk about like things that he missed and all this stuff and some things like family things and stuff. And I remember thinking, oh, we're going to end up there at some point, but it's not. and I was like, okay, cool. And I just sort of slotted that away. And then in summer 2020, he says to me, what would you think if I got a job in Scotland? Of course, we ended up in England, but he just meant like in terms of moving to the UK, and he knows how much I love Scotland. And I was like, oh, sure. Like I would just need to get a visa. You need to get a job. Like I work remotely, so that's nice. Cool. And I was, but like, I was so shocked. And I said to him, I was like, you've genuinely surprised me, because I thought this would happen, but like 10 years from now. And he's like, mm-hmm. yeah, no, I think I want to do that now. And I was like, okay, cool. Let's do it. And then I realized, oh my goodness, my dream's coming true. And uh-huh. I didn't even yep. realize it was still like a thing in my brain, you know?
Yes. Yes. I had such a similar experience. And it's funny because for me, I didn't really know where I wanted to be. I really in my heart wanted the experience of living somewhere else. And for people, anyone who knows me, I've had like this weird, I don't want to call it obsession, that's too strong, but I've always been very drawn to Brazil and Brazilian culture. And I actually went traveling there before I even met Mario. So, the joke is that I also manifested him,
which I was going to say, probably same for you though.
Yeah, but probably, but as you were telling that story, I'm like, yeah, but you also chose a partner where that was a possibility, right?
Yeah. Same, but you know what? Me. I didn't even think of it as a possibility. You know what I mean? It was just like, oh, okay, we'll go visit. That's nice.
But to me, that's like, probably it was a bit in your subconscious, right?
Oh, and obviously.
For me, I was like, oh, well, like I didn't. Same thing. Like I didn't meet him being like, okay, great. If we 7 years from now have a child and I'm pregnant with our second, maybe we'll move to Brazil. But I think it was more like there's a stronger possibility that that's where we could go if I'm dating a Brazilian versus dating someone who's from Germany.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, so it's really cool. I love that.
Aww. All right, Emily, lightning round. Let's see if we can make this lightning, because I feel like either that or I have to rename it, because it usually ends up being more conversation and there's nothing wrong with that. But let's see if we can do lightning. What are you currently reading?
Okay, I just read a bunch of Colleen Hoover books. And I just also finished The Last Mrs. Parrish by Liv Constantine. So good. And then I'm also reading Think and Grow Rich, which is like a very old book.
Who's it by?
Napoleon Hill. I feel like it was written in like the 40s or something. Mm-hmm. So some of the things they say in it, I'm like, oh gosh, that's offside, but it's from so long ago. But it's kind of interesting because they reference, you know, like Ford as examples of manifesting things. So anyway, it's interesting.
Huh. All right. Now, so I'm going to split this into two. So favorite food while you're pregnant and favorite food when you're not.
It's kind of the same. I had with Leo, I craved watermelon. I ate so much of it. This time I don't have any cravings. Funny because we were talking about the international food I'm missing. So the first things I thought about were like Thai food and Greek food, but I just love food. I love everything.
Yeah. I think you and I are similar in that fashion. Like I used to be such a picky eater when I was younger, but then as I started traveling, I just realized how much I really love food.
I love food.
It's good to nourish yourself. Mm-hmm. All right. And what are you looking forward to the most about meeting baby boy number two?
Oh, such a cute question. I think two things, just like getting to know him. It's funny. You have no idea what this kid's going to be like. So what's his personality going to be like? And then seeing Leo as a big brother. So I'm really curious to see that. Aww. And I actually, third thing is I'm so curious because I think it's so fascinating how genetics show up. I'm really curious to see what the baby looks like. Because for those who don't know me yet, like my husband's Brazilian and has like dark hair and dark eyes, and I'm like blonde blue eyes. And so I really anticipated that our child would have like brown eyes and dark hair, and Leo is like my carbon copy almost. So I'm so curious, like, what is this kid going to look like? Who knows?
Oh, that's exciting. Mm-hmm. Well, Emily, it was so nice to catch up with you. And I'm so pleased that we got a chance to do this before you give birth. I realized you shared how far along in your pregnancy was. And I thought, oh my goodness, if I'm going to get her for a podcast, I need to do that now.
Yes. And it's like the baby could be born on your birthday. Who knows? It's a Libra baby for sure. So,
oh, it's a Libra baby. That's very exciting. I like when more Libra babies come into the world. I think that we provide a stereotype as whatever as it sounds like. I think we provide balance into the world. So
you do. And I'm a Libra moon and rising actually. So I like read very Libra. So obviously we're great.
Thanks for tuning in to City Girl Talks. If you enjoyed this conversation, please take a moment to subscribe, leave a review, and share with a friend. You can also join the conversation over on social @City Girl Talks. See you next episode for another round of Girl Talk.